Avraham Avinu had guests in his house, and he served them a suda, and the Torah tells us exactly what was on the menu. The Torah says that he took chema v'chalav, butter, milk, uben abakar asher asa, and a very nicely prepared piece of meat, v'yitin lefnehem, v'hu emin aleihem v'yechidim. So, I'm not in the kashrus industry, but if I had a kashrus organization, I assume I would revoke the hechshar for that. So the shadow is, what's going on here? The chema v'chalav, and then then the ben abakar.
Every kid learns. First they had the malachics and that flesh.
Except. Okay, so we'll see.
The other thing, he knew they were malachim maybe, and they are above them.
There's multiple malachim, you're all onto something. What?
Was there a Pesach? They had a pas also.
Yeah.
No, that could be matzah. That could be matzah.
Should we eat matzah or pesach?
Mm. Oh,
here. So there's
when we talk about whether they kept the mitzvahs or not. So what I was thinking about now when I saw this was that because she was parsonida, she didn't serve the bread.
Right.
Why can't they eat the
bread that's coming?
What are they? Why couldn't they eat?
Okay, yeah, I hear. The Gemara in Chagiga says that prushim are makbet to be oichalim and chuleim b'tahara. I hear. Yeah, that's a good hara. Okay, so on the basis of chalav ha'ara, so we have some very creative ideas. The Shlach Kadesh refers to a Gemara in Chulin Daf Nun Tes, where it says, it's talking over there, we've mentioned this Gemara before. Maybe last year we were talking about how in terms of Adam and Rishon, there was no fleshings, right? Only from Noach and on, they started to eat fleshings. In the times of Adam and Rishon, it was only vegetation that he ate. And the Gemara says that over there, that's where it comes from. Chulin Daf Nun Tes Amud Beis. And then the Gemara has a kasha, really. The Gemara says, Meisvei, there's a brisa that tells a story about how Adam and Rishon was sitting on Eden, and it says that the malachim were roasting his meat and filtering his wine, and he was reclining, and the snake took a peek and saw what a glorious life he had, and he got jealous, and that's why the snake came and made the whole trouble. There's a braisa that tells the story of the nachash against that backdrop. But the Gemara says that we're interested in just one little detail. It says the malachim were roasting his meat. Meat, I thought you just said Adam Rishon doesn't eat meat. So the Gemara says, that wasn't our kind of meat. That was basar min hashamayim. That he got meat that fell down from heaven. It wasn't real meat. The Gemara asks on that, what I guess you or I would also ask, and the Gemara says, what? Is there any meat that falls down from heaven? The Gemara says, sure, don't you know the story? That one time, what does it say? One of them, I remember now, who was walking in the wilderness, and a lion came and was growling out at him. So he said a pasuk, "Kfir m'shayegim lateref," and two chunks of meat fell down from heaven. And the Gemara says that one of the chunks the lion came and ate, and then the lion was satisfied, so he went away, and that the rabbi was safe. And then the other piece of meat he brought to the Beis Medrash, and he said, "You'll never believe where I got this meat, and now I want to know whether this is kosher or it's not kosher." And they said, in the Beis Medrash, they said, "Ein davar tamei yerid min hashamayim," that you could, if it came from Shemayim, consider it kosher. Hmm. So that's the story over there. But you see that the Gemara says, if there really is such a thing as Basar min hashamayim, the Gemara says, yeah, there's such a thing as Basar min hashamayim. So the Shlach Kaddish says that's what Avraham Avinu really served them. He served them Basar min hashamayim.
He said he prepared the
buffer. I mean, the Gemara says he prepared it. So the Malbim says, the Malbim gives a mahalach, which is really along the same lines as the Shlach, but he kind of one-ups the Shlach. He says, I'll make it a little bit better. In terms of how he's answering the Kaddish, it's the same idea as the Shlach. But he says, you quoted a Gemara in did I say Chulin? I'm sorry, that was Sanhedrin Daf Nun Tes. He said, you're quoting a Gemara in Daf Nun Tes. Turn a few pages, Sanhedrin Daf Samach Hei, and over there the Gemara tells the following story that it says Reb Chia and Reb Oishia, I think, would spend their Erev Shabbos being Oisik in the Sefer Yitzira, and Rashi explains that in that Sefer there are secrets about how to be mitzaref the oisiyos of Hashem's name to create things. And they would create an iglatulsa a very fine animal, va'achlila, and they would eat that, presumably means for their Shabbos Suda, that they would have their Friday night Shabbos Suda would be the meat of the animal that they created with the Sefer Yetzirah. So the Malbim says, and he writes that, says Amru Chazal, without giving a source, I don't know where this Maamar Chazal is, really. I mean, I looked around, using technological resources, and it seems it's very hard to find where this Maamar Chazal is. But the Malbim at least suggests that if you take a look at the lashon of the pasuk, so it says twice. It says Vel Habakar Rots Avraham Vayem Maher. Lasis, I say. Yeah. He hurried lasis. What is lasis? Lasis means to make.
To make it, yeah.
And then it says that he gave them the chem of chalv uben abakar asher asa. Again, asa means he made. So the Malbim says that, you know what it means? That Avram Vinu made this ben abakar. This wasn't a real bakar that was born from a daddy bakar and a mommy bakar. This was a ben abakar asher asa. It was made from the Sefer Yetzirah. And now the Malbim, so and therefore again, so the Malbim says, so that answers the question. It wasn't really flesh eggs.
And why do you run to Vikash? Because just so it shouldn't look like he was doing medicine, like he was trying to cover it up. So why do you run the first words of the Pasuk? He's also
right. Maybe he ran to the bookcase to get to David Zero. I don't know. Why he had to run.
Actually, you know, there was now the in Israel probably they're making now 3D printing of meat. They say they came up with a steak. The rabbanim say it's kosher, but it's they want to do it power, but you have to treat it as if it's fleishig.
So I was going to say that this is mamish very negayah, this shayla. The Malbim and the Shlah are both saying that if you have meat that we could say, you know, it walks like a ben bakar, it talks like a ben bakar, it quacks like a ben bakar, but if it's not a real ben bakar, it's not fleishig. Meaning if it was made with derech meifis, it's not fleishig. It has very serious ramifications nowadays, you know, what they call the impossible meat.
Burger.
The impossible meat, which is not just, you know, taking plants and injecting flavor, but my understanding is that they chemically, you know, on a molecular level, they reproduce meat. So that it's molecularly identical to real meat. That's, I don't know if that's actually what's done now, or at least that's the goal of what they are trying to accomplish. And then, you know, you could very much clear this shaila. How do you treat that? So here, these Ma'ar Makaymais, these Achrayinim, are coming out and saying that such meat would not be considered fleishigs. On the other hand, you know, I think one could argue that the Gemaras that we mentioned, each of the two Gemaras, I think is mashma a little bit that it would be considered fleishig. The first Gemara, or the Gemara, let's say, about Rechim Rav Yishu with the Sefer Yetzirah, maybe not, it doesn't indicate so much, but, you know, it does say they use it for their Shabbos Suda. Shabbos Suda is supposed to have basar. So maybe that's not much of a riot, but maybe it's certainly not much of a riot, but maybe it's a little bit of a mashmos that we would consider that real basar. But I think a little bit more of a riot from the other Gemara, the one on Daphne and Tess, where it says that he had this piece of meat and he brought it to the Beis Medrash to ask whether it's tummy or tahar. And they told him, Ein davar tummy yoyim min hashamayim. The mashmos of the Gemara is that he wanted to know whether to treat it as kosher meat or non-kosher meat, like the meat of a cow or the meat of a pig. In fact, the follow-up Gemara is, what about if it comes down shaped like a donkey? So then would we treat it as non-kosher meat? And they said, back, no, we would still treat it as kosher because ein davar tamei yarid min hashamayim. But it sounds like his issue was treat it like a cow or treat it like a pig, but not treat it like jelly beans, which is what it, you know, the other side of the debate over here. So that Gemara, it's not a raya, but there is a little bit of mashmos over there that it would be considered fleishig. But the Shlah is bringing that Gemara to say that, no, that solves the problem of how Avraham Avinu was able to serve it together with butter, because if you have meat that doesn't really come from a real animal, then it's not considered fleishig. The Shlah and the Malbim are both saying that. One of the Shalos Teshuvos that is actually a very well-known, famous tshuva that's on a different topic, but it's related to this, that would have bearing on this shaila, is the famous tshuva from the Chacham Tzvi, where he talks about whether if somebody makes a person, in the using the same method, what nowadays people call a golem. I'm not sure where that comes from, but the Lashon and the Gemara, it's in the Gemara in Sanhedrin Samachay, the same Gemara we're talking about, the same Sefer Yetzirah. So it says that Rabbi Chiya Rabbi Yishu would make an Igel Tilsa, but a few lines earlier it says Rabbi Bara Gavra. Rabbi made a person. He was able to, using the Kaychais of the Shemais and the Oisiais of the Sefer Yetzirah, Rabbi Bara Gavra. He made a person. So the Chacham Tzvi declared a Shaila whether that person can be mitzarif to a minion. Could you, if you need a minion for Kaddish or Kedusha, and you're able to use the Sefer Yetzirah to make a new person, are you able to be mitzarif into a minion?
Maybe he was a Nekeva. Right, who says
well, you could make it, Zachor.
You can make a man.
Yeah. Right, you can make it. You're making a goof. You're making a goof.
Well, right, you get a brisk.
So,
these are really serious questions.
He came up, it's in a
Sefer Shas and Shuvis. Not only that, you know, right, it seems like something you take tongue in cheek.
Was he in Prague?
No, he was not in Prague.
Could you eat it?
We'll try to address that. The Chacham Tzvi. He was really all over Europe. He was in Amsterdam, which is northwest, and he was also in Serbia, Bosnia area, which is southeast. So he was in some places in between. Also, he was also in Hamburg. He was over there.
How long ago?
He died, if I'm not mistaken, around the year 1718, give or take a couple of years. He wrote a tshuva about this. There are two issues involved, right? Is he even Jewish, right? There's the shaila of, do you consider him a human being? And then there was the furthermore shaila, okay, assuming he's a human being, do you consider him Jewish? He brings in, it's surprising that he brings this in as a serious makar, but he says that, you know, Chazal say, so maybe on that basis, I could consider it my child. And he also brings the Medrash Rashi at the beginning of Parshas Noach, that till the same shal sadikim ilum asayim hatoivim. So on that basis, he says maybe we could consider the golem to be a Jewish. You know, if he's made by a Jewish golem maker, then maybe we could consider him Jewish. On the other hand, maybe not. Maybe he's not even considered a human being because the Gemara. So you asked before, you know, does he have an neshama? The Gemara says when the Gemara tells the story about Rabba Bar Gavra, it says Shadrach Hamed Rab Zeira. He sent him to Rab Zeira, and Rab Zeira tried to make a conversation with him, and this Gavro couldn't answer because he didn't know how to speak. And then Reb Zeira said, I see you're not a real person. You're just one of those magic things. Tivla Afrech, go back to your dust. And he did. And that ended him. So that seemed like he didn't consider that to be an Isser Vitzicha on this, right? He just did away with this Gavro. That seems to suggest that it's not a real person. He leaves it as a suffix. He says, you know, I could see like this, I could see like that, I have some arm. He doesn't give a final answer. So halacha l'maisa, you have to ask the Rav Mishul.
People like that,
Marshall. Yeah, that's right. I don't remember who it was that said, heard someone saying over this tshuva of the Chacham Tzvi, and he said he had a shayla that one goylem. We make a minion with lots of goylem. But anyway, interestingly, the Mishnah Berurah brings down that, you know, you said that, you know, like Robert, you were saying that it's hard to imagine that he meant this so seriously. But the Mishnah Berurah actually brings us down the halacha. In the beginning of Siman Nun Hey, where it's talking about the credentials to be part of a minyan, and it says that you need Zacharim, Gedolim, and Bnei Chayrin. And then the Mishnah Berurah, whether a golem is mitzarif to a minion. He doesn't call it a golem. He says a person that was made with the Sefer Yetzirah is mitzarif to a minion. He thought that was an important shaila for us to know about. It's interesting. Now,
is it worse than a person who's shikr?
It certainly might be. Now, it could, you know, it, why this was of particular interest to the Chacham Tzvi there actually is a good answer to that.
You have to check the guy that was Yichus.
The Chacham Tzvi had a personal interest in this Shaila. Again, whether or not this Shaila is so negeh for, you know, in Halacha Lamais, again, that the Mishabur brings it down, I find really surprising. I don't know what to make of that, that he thought that was important to bring down. But that the Chacham Tzvi wrote about it, there could be a little bit of an ulterior motive here, because in his mishpacha, this was halacha l'maisa. He had a very chashav zedek called Rabbi Yo Chelm. He's also called Rabbi Yo Baal Shem. Is before, not in the times of Baal Shem Tov, but in the days before the Baal Shem Tov, there were people that were called Baal Shem. People that were known to be Isaac in Sirufei Shemais were called Baal Shem. And there was an Eliyahu Baal Shem who was Rav in Chelm. Chelm, by the way, is in Litta. It's a Litvish city. And this Rav Eliyahu was the Rav of Chelm. And there was a family tradition that he did this. He was Bar Gavra. The Chacham Tzvi refers to it. The Chacham Tzvi's son, Rav Yaakov Emden, also refers in a few places to this Mephis of his Zeda. It was the Chacham Tzvi's grandfather, I think, his mother's father, maybe his mother's grandfather, that that was Bar Gavra. So he writes about it, you know, being retired from a minion. That is definitely one of the angles that you could bring to bear on this shaila of whether a Ben Abakar Asher Asa would be considered fleshings or not. I would just be aware, though, a very significant difference that it could be that when it comes to calling somebody a person, like yes, you said before, does he have an neshama? That should be an integral part of being called a person. Remember the in the Potzik and Bereshit where it says V'yipach ba'ap of nishmas chayim, right, which is really what defines a human being. The lashon of Targum Unkelis on the nishmas chayim is ruach mamalala. The koyach hadibur is what makes an adam into an adam, and these the Gemara says that this gavra that's made from the sefer yitzira wasn't able to talk. He came to Rabzeir Sri, wasn't able to talk. Then he said, "Oh, you're not real," and he got rid of him. So it could be that when it comes to making a person that doesn't have a ruach mamalala, that's a fatal flaw. That's ma'akiv. It can't be called a person. But for a behemah anyway can't talk. So this absence of a ruach mamalala is not as critical absence, a deficiency. So maybe there's more of a makom to say that it is considered a real behemah. But al kapanim, again, the shaila, you know, I'm leaving an open shaila, obviously, you know, in either presently or in the near future, kashrus organizations are really going to have to take a policy on this. But these ma'ar mekayimus are relevant. The Malbim and the Shlah both say that such things are not considered fleshings, and they say, and that's the teretz to why Avraham Avinu did what he did. Okay, let's bring in a different mahalach, one that's much more relevant to the conventional hilchos basar b'chalav. Some of the Rishonim here on the Pasuk that talk about this kasha, the Chizkuni and the Dasikanim of Aliyah Tesis, they both say that, and I think Izzy, you said this at the beginning of the Shir, that the answer is really simple. It's if you read the Pasuk carefully, the answer is right there. It says Chema V'chalav, and then it says Ben Avakar. So, okay, I guess, you know, you could ask the kasha. The kasha is if you read the Pasuk and you understand that he put it all down in front of them. But if you read the Pasuk, if you say, look, the Pasuk put it in that order because it meant Bedafka, that it was in that order.
Okay.
So that's a Chizkuni that you... The Chizkuni says that Mikan, there's a remez or a zecher ledavar to that which the Gemara says in Chulin. This time it's Chulin. Chulin daf kuf hei, ochal basar asr lechal gvina. Ochal gvina, mutra lechal basar. You're allowed to have fleshings after milchings, you're just not allowed to have milchings after fleshings. So the Chizkuni, the Dasikanan, they both say that's why it's merumas in the pasuk. This pasuk is a remnant to that teaching of Rav Chisda, and that's why there was nothing wrong with this Chema B'chalav and Ben Abakar because it went in the right order. The Dasikanan actually has a very geshmaka hisafa. He says that the Gemara in Yuma, which we've quoted a number of times over the years, that Avraham Avinu was Mekayim Kol Torah Kula Ashlei Nitna, and then the final words of that famous line are Va'afilu Erev Tavshilin. And it means to say he mamish kept everything not only the Yeraisis, even to Rabbanans. But it still remains strange. Everybody wonders, why did it pick Erev Tavshilin of all things, right? There's a lot of Rabbanans wanted to say Afilun Tilos and Dayim, you know, Erev Chatzeiros. What's up with Erev Tavshilin? So the Dazakenim has a very creative solution. he says it doesn't mean Erev Tevshilin in the sense that we usually use it, that it means, you know, that when Yom Tov comes before Shabbos, you start cooking for Shabbos before Yom Tov, and that's called your Erev Tevshilin. It means Erev as in mixing up, meaning being arranging the right order for the Tevshilin, for the dishes and the meal. That he was Mekayim, the Din D'Rabbanon of how you're Ma'ariv your Tevshilin, that you can't put the Basar before the, you can't put the Ben HaBakar before the Chaim HaBachol, you have to put the Chaim HaBachol before the Ben HaBakar. That's the Erev Tevshilin that Avraham Avinu was Mekayim. That's what the Dalai Kingdom says. So now, but then the Shaila remains, so how well does this take care of the problem? Let's say we accept that they were going from the milchigs to the fleishigs, and then you're allowed. Achol gvinah mutar, achol basar.
Could be a
fleishig
cheese also, no?
What?
Could be a fleishig cheese. Can you make fleishig if it comes out of the animals, the fleishigs or something?
Well, that's why it's tray. If you can't eat the cheese, the non-kosher cheese, because they put, in order to make the cheese, they put a fair, the rennet, which is rennet. Made, the rennet is made.
If that doesn't make it not kosher, no, the cheese is allowed to be made like that. I think.
But the rennet is not kosher.
No.
Right, but even...
The shayla of the rennet is considered meichel or not. That's one of the issues.
No. I think they use synthetic now. They don't use...
I think even non-kosher cheese is synthetic nowadays because it's just cheaper. Uh-huh. Yeah. And it works.
And the rennet.
So now, if you're going... let's say we accept this, that you're going from milchigs to fleishigs. So Rav Chisid, the words of the Gemara were achel gvina mutal achel basar. Does that mean straight? Are there any restrictions? So the truth is that there's a machlekes rishonim about that, and it really depends on how you read the other half of the sentence. The achel basar asr lachel gvina, that the Gemara says, Rav Chisid says, if you eat fleishigs, you're not allowed to eat milchigs afterwards. Okay, till when? What does that mean, eating milchigs afterwards? So Rav Chisid doesn't really explain what he means. And it's interesting, the Gemara doesn't really give instructions. We get the instructions for that, about what you do between fleishigs and milchigs, from a line in the Gemara a few lines later that's almost written as an agarata, like as a storytelling line. The Gemara says, Amar mar ukva, ano baha milsa lagabe, ano baha milsa lagabe avua kachala bar chamra. He says, mean compared to my father, I'm like vinegar compared to wine. Wine, we know, is a very chash of a drink, and when wine goes bad, it turns into vinegar. So if he says, I to my father am like vinegar to wine, means that my father was way more chash of, and I'm like pretty bad compared to my father. I'm on a much lower madriga. Why? And what he says, because when my father would eat fleishigs, he wouldn't eat milchigs until it was the following day at the same time. In other words, he would wait 24 hours between fleishigs and milchigs. Vano, but I'm not so from. I just don't eat it in the same meal, but in the next meal I'm allowed to eat it. So the Rishonim say that while he was maybe just talking about, you know, it sounds a little bit like he was sharing with his therapist, you know, the anxiety that he has about his relationship with his father, but we get from there, Hilchos Basar B'Challav, what do you do between fleishigs and milchigs? It has to be misudas to misudas. You have to go from one sudas to the next. But what does that mean? So Tosis writes that this means, you know, take it at face value. It has nothing to do with waiting. You don't have to wait. It just can't be the same suda. So if you're eating fleishigs and you want to eat milchigs, so what Tosis says is you bench and you take away the table, because remember in those days, that was always part of the preparation for a meal. The tables were small pieces of furniture and they would bring the table in with the food. So you take away the table, and you bring in another table. Nowadays, you know, we would say you clear off the table and you reset the table. You have a birkas hamazon in between, and then you go on to your milchigs. And even though, how long does it take to clear the table, set the table, and and bench? So a few minutes, and then you're ready to eat milchigs. And he says that's all you have to do.
So in Holland, right? The Dutch do that.
Not quite. No, we're going to come to that minhag. Anyway, they do is a little bit of a pshara in between the different shittas. That's what Tosis says. Other Rishonim, the Rush brings down that some say that when Mar Okva says, I wait from one suda, I don't eat in that suda, I eat in the next suda, he doesn't mean a makbit to switch sudas. He means that I wait, he was talking about waiting, I wait the length of time that separates one suda from the next. So if you eat fleishigs, you can't eat milchigs until it's the next suda time. Well, and the Rosh doesn't give a shear for that, and the early Rishonim also, they didn't give a shear for that, but they said that they understood that when Rav Chista talked, or Mar Okva rather, talked about Suda L'Suda, he didn't mean literally, he really meant the Zman of Suda L'Suda. The Rambam learns the Gemara that way, and the Rambam says, V'hu kemoi sheishois. He says, and that's around 6 hours. This Rambam is, as far as I know, that's the first place where it says 6 hours. Like the magic 6 hours that everybody knows nowadays, that we wait 6 hours between Fleishigs and Melchigs, the Makar is a Rambam. I mean, it's based on this Gemara, but the Gemara might not really mean waiting altogether. The Gemara, or Taisa says, it just means making a different Suda. But even assuming that it means waiting, the Gemara doesn't say how long to wait. The Rambam says that it means Kemoshe Shois. So, it's a little bit of a mystery. Where did the Rambam get this shear from? The Gemara says...
Shlomo told me
yeah.
that this is a makor for the 5 hours and something from the Rambam, from the Kershe Shois, that it's... God, really? I had asked him, my really? Parents were 5 years plus, 5 hours plus, I wanted, I was in Shiva to be from it to say,
okay.
says this is the makor, he told me that in the sixth hour.
He quoted the Rambam. Interesting. So, and was he saying, so that's the right thing? That's what everyone should do? Or just that if that's no, your minhag, you should follow?
If that's your minhag, you follow it, there's a makor for it. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Six hours is the time of digestion. That's why he said he was a doctor. Depends
what you're reading.
So okay.
Depends what you're reading.
Doesn't matter. 6 hours.
Does it take 6 hours to digest?
I think typically we say that it means
was
a full 6 hours, but Donnie was just saying that he was speaking to Shlomo Zalman Auerbach about a family minhag to wait into the sixth hour, and he said it has a basis
in
the
5 hours plus.
5 hours
plus, yeah.
Right.
I also remember 5 hours.
So the Rambam says 6 hours. It's a mystery. Where did he get this number from? The Gura says that it's based on a Gemara Maseches Shabbos. Well, first of all, we have to keep in mind that the whole notion of three square meals, which is the way Americans like to eat, that's a modern notion. In the times of Chazal, if you ate well, that meant two meals a day, two real meals a day. There was the morning meal and the evening meal. The evening meal presumably was when it got dark. That's more than just presumably. You see in the Gemara at the very beginning of Maseches Brachos on Beis HaMeveis, a few different prices about people ate a little bit before it got dark, a little bit after it got dark, but it was right around when it got dark. That was when people ate the evening meal. The earlier meal, so there's the Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Yud, where it gives a bunch of different zmanim, and these people, you know, the lazy people, the busy people, different times when they would eat their early meal, their morning meal. And it says that the Talmidei Chachamim had the latest Zman, and they ate at Chatzos. They would eat at 6 hours. 6 hours into the day, they would eat their morning meal. So that was the latest breakfast. Meaning, I guess, because they after davening, they would sit down and learn, and they wouldn't take a break until 6 hours into the day. So the Gura says that if you take that Zman of 6 hours into the day, for in other words, what we call lunchtime, noontime, is your first meal. And the other meal is when it gets dark, which is at the end of the day, that's 12 hours into the day. So from 6 hours to 12 hours, that's a 6 hour gap. So that's why so the Gemara in Chulin says, Mar Ukva says that I'm a vinegar. I just wait me suda la suda. And the Rambam says that's 6 hours. Like the great, yeah, because if you follow the schedule that the Gemara says in Shabbos Daf Yud, that your first meal is at 12 noon and your second meal is at 6 p.m., so that's your 6 hours, me suda la suda. So putting together those two gemaras, that's how we came to 6 hours. But Lamaitz is a big machlekes Rishonim. The Rambam says 6 hours. The Rambam, that definitely became the accepted minhag among the Sfaradim. I don't know at what point it became so widespread, but certainly in the times of the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber paskins that after you eat fleishigs, you have to wait 6 hours before you can eat milchigs. But the Ramah says that we here in Ashkenaz, that's not what most people do. What's the minhag? He says the widespread minhag in Ashkenaz is that people wait an hour. Now, what's pshat in an hour? That's zichronat the pshat in the Gemara. Right? The Gemara says misuja lasuda. That could mean one of two things. It can mean what Taisa says, that you just end the meal, bench, change the table, and then start again. Or it could mean what. 60 minutes. What the other Rishonim say, then it means the weight, the amount of time that it takes from one suit to the next, but that's not an hour. Anyway, so where did an hour come from? So the Rama says that he thinks that this minhag was meant as a pshara. It's like that really we're following Taisvis, that you don't have to wait. You just have to switch meals. But as sort of a nod towards the other reading of the Gemara, we wait a little. So the minhag became that we wait an hour. Zok the Rama, that's the widespread minhag here. Here in Ashkenaz, that's what most people do. Then he adds, but some people say you should wait 6 hours. Something like that. He gives some kind of an endorsement. The impression that you get reading it is that was not the widespread practice. He says the widespread practice here is an hour, but there is a minhag of 6 hours, and it's a fine thing to do. So this is in the 1500s. It seems from the Rama that it wasn't widespread in Ashkenaz to wait 6 hours, but the Rama thought that it's a good idea. The Rama, of course, was a very, very influential paisek. The Rama said it was a good idea. So that became that, you know, in most of Europe, certainly in Eastern Europe, in all of Eastern Europe, and again, I don't know the history well enough to know, like from the 1500s to the 1600s to the 1700s, exactly at what point did it become so widespread. But eventually it became very, very widespread, nearly universal, to the point that, among most Ashkenazi communities, certainly the Eastern European Ashkenazi communities, it was unheard of not to wait the 6 hours and to follow.
Sfarim waited at that point 6 hours?
Yeah.
Sfarim waited 6, Ashkenazi waited 1.
Right. You know, there's actually a very interesting piece of history about that. When, you know, in the times of the Rambam, or right after the Rambam, in the early 1200s, the Rambam died in 1204, and the Rambam always had some controversies. There, he had his critics. Some of the worst criticisms of the Rambam came actually after he died, when his writings were brought to Ashkenaz. During his lifetime, again, you know, in those days, the world was a very big place. And, you know, if you were in one part of the world, especially if you were in one kingdom, right, if you were living in the Arab lands, the Christian lands were like a whole different world. The Rambam lived his whole life among the Muslims. And even though he was world famous in that world, and every Jew, beyond from sea to shining sea, you know, over a very, very large geographic area, knew about the Rambam and studied his works, but in Ashkenaz, they didn't have it. The people living in France and in Germany did not, I don't know if they didn't, you know, no. Didn't hear from altogether even as a person, but certainly didn't have his svarim. Until after he died, he died in 1204, and about 10 years later is when his svarim first came to the yeshivas in France. And then, as is well known, there was a lot of opposition. The things that he wrote there that were in a whole mahalach that was very unfamiliar to the Yidden in France, and there was a very strong opposition. There were people that were, you know, there were the Maiminim and the Masmi'ilim. The Masmi'ilim were, that's what the nickname for those that were against Maimini were called the Masmi'ilim. They were very critical of the Rambam and the, right. And they even, you know, they condemned him and they said that certain works are not allowed to be read. And then there was even some violence that was done against those Svarim. It was a very divisive time. The Ramban, who at that time, the Ramban is a dar, really two daries after the Rambam. Mm-hmm. So he was a relatively young man, but the Ramban threw himself into the center of this controversy, and he wrote a letter to the Balei HaTosfos, to the Rabbanim in France. And his letter was a letter defending the Rambam. And it's interesting because in a lot of the issues that they were criticizing the Rambam for, he was really more on their side. He was, without going into the Pratim on that, he really was a little bit more ideologically in the camp of the Balei HaTosfos. But he said, but you're writing from France and you're just seeing these writings, you know, the Svarim of the Rambam, and you're judging without any context. But I'm a Svaradi, I'm a little bit closer, even though, I mean, he lived in Spain, he didn't live where the Rambam lived. But I'm a little closer to the Rambam's territory, and I have more of the context. I know who he was. I've heard about him as a... And that was really the main theme of the letter, the tzidkus, the anava, the kedusha, the avas hatera of the Rambam. And in one of the long... And there are other... You know, it's a long letter. It really covers a lot of topics. But one of the lines that he writes over there, he says that, you know, maybe you think that because he comes with a philosophical bent, so sometimes you find that the people that are philosophizing the Mamari Chazal are less medakdek in the halacha. There is such a pattern, you know, people say, oh, this is not to be taken literally, and, you know, it's one thing to say that about Agadatas, but if you have that inclination to go say that this is not supposed to be taken literally, you might start to say it about some halachas, and maybe they suspected that you might find some things in the Rambam, and the Ramban was writing, but you know that's not true of him. I mean, look through his Sefer, he's very, very strict about all halachas, and then he writes over there, he has the line that, take a look at what he says about eating fleishigs after milchigs. I'm sorry, eating milchigs after fleishigs, and use the lashon of the Gemara, the shenacholim b'afikayren, right, which is a line from that sugya kuf dalet and beis into kuf hamad aleph, and he means to say I don't want to call it like a shtach or a dig, but he meant to be saying to the Balei HaTosfos, you're worried that he's not firm enough? He wouldn't eat in your house because he waited 6 hours after fleishigs. No, you wait after fleishigs. You want fleishigs? You just go eat the fleishigs. You put it on a new tablecloth and you're good to go. And he waited 6 hours after fleishigs. So that was one of the points that was brought in the defense of the Rambam, of the Kedusha of the Rambam. So you had this Sfaradi Ashkenazi divide in the 1500s. The Ramos said that the wise minig over here is 1 hour. But since then, it's become very, very widespread. Again, not universal. Everybody knows that the Yekis wait 3 hours, even though it's not clear where that shear comes from. But that's an old minhag.
What? I thought that was a compromise between the one and the six.
Yeah, I guess so. It's some kind of a compromise. And
Yekis don't compromise. That's Dr. Bondi.
And then there's the minhag of the Dutch Jews. That they still know that, what is that? I assume that means Amsterdam. Is that which community is in Holland? I guess the Jews of Amsterdam, which is a very old community. Well,
weren't that many?
Yeah, I mean, it was once a prominent community, yeah. But certainly not in recent days. Right?
1600, I think those are the ones that came
from Portugal in the 1600s, yes.
They went from Spain to Portugal to Amsterdam.
Right, okay, but that was the Sephardi community of Amsterdam. That's not who we're talking about. Uh-huh. Amsterdam was unique. They had, for a few centuries, two kehillahs living side by side, with two separate rabbanim. We were talking before about the Chacham Tzvi. I think he was the Ashkenazi rabbi in Amsterdam at one point, as well as being in Hamburg at one point in his life. But over there they have a minhag of 1 hour. That's the minhag. And I think Ari Amazeh, even though I don't know if there's really any continuity from, you know, of today's Kehillah in Amsterdam, which I don't know their story, but I would just tend to assume that it was probably newcomers after World War II. Was there any
community that continued
straight? What?
My nephew still waits an hour. Ralbag. He's from...
And where does he live?
He lives here, but he grew up, he was born, he grew up
and
in Amsterdam.
He lives in, and he eats milchigs after an hour? I was told that the people over there say that because it's such a minority minhag, it can only be followed
if you live
in the Kehillah. Mm-hmm. In the Kehillah. You know, okay. People in Amsterdam wait an hour, but if you move elsewhere, I guess not everybody
I'll
follows
find
that.
Out. No, I'll find out exactly.
New
Orleans. There
was this minute. That's right. New York, New Amsterdam, right? Also, maybe New York should also make 1 hour. Okay, you can start a new Hampshire. So that was the.
You don't find many people today that do it an hour, right?
No, I don't know anybody that only waits an hour. As far as I know, it's only in Holland, which I guess means in Amsterdam. Over there, people have that minhag. It's a legitimate minhag. It goes back to the Ramah. The Ramah says that was the original minhag Ashkenaz, at least in his time, that was the minhag Ashkenaz. But nowadays, nobody does that. But there are, you know, there's a situation where this becomes the gear. This, you know, to know the history, that even though, yeah, nowadays we all wait 6 hours, but If you're Ashkenazi, it's not really me'ikra din. It's more because, you know, the Rama said, nochen lahachmir, or some such lashon, so we took on that minig, and now it's once it became so widespread, so al tidish teres et mech, you're not allowed to violate it. But what about in the following scenario? Let's say a person had fleishigs for lunch. He doesn't usually have fleishigs for lunch, but he was, whatever, there was a party in the office, and he had fleishigs. So he comes home at 5 o'clock, and usually he's not fleishigs at this time. So he forgets for a moment that he had a hamburger at 1 o'clock, and his wife serves him a piece of lasagna, that's what she made for supper. He says, Baruch Hashem l'kinei ma'achilom b'rei m'nei mezoinois, and then he remembers. So now what should he do? So on the way, you know, you're not allowed to eat fleishigs, it's a very strong minhag, al titish teres imecha, but it's only mishum minhag.
Grab a piece of cake.
And baruch levatala, to make a baruch levatala, that's a real iser.
What about Sean
Banks? Okay, okay, you can throw that in also. Yeah. But that doesn't solve the problem. But same Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Levad. I'm happy you brought that up. That's important to clarify. One second, I'm going to request, can I have another seltzer first? Saying Baruch Shem is never matir anything. You're not allowed to say a bracha, that's levatala, and then say Baruch Shem. The only time that Baruch Shem you should think of as being the same as saying I'm sorry. Meaning, if you do something wrong, so then you have to say I'm sorry. But that I'm going to say I'm sorry is not a hetter to ba'avil somebody. So if you make a bracha levatala, you have to say Baruch Shem. But you can't say a bracha levatala al das that you're going to say Baruch Shem afterwards. So here he said the bro, my name is Zainais. Yeah, obviously he's right. Somebody says to take a piece of cake. Right? If there's alternatives, so that'll solve the problem. But let's say you don't have an alternative. So now it's either don't eat it and then it'll be a bracha latala, or eat it and then you're eating melech eggs after flesh eggs. So the Badei Shulchan has a discussion about this. Well, obviously we would only need a very small amount because to justify a bracha vatol, all you need is a mashahu. And he says that certainly if it's past an hour, you should eat. You should take a bite. A small bite, but eat a mashahu, but violate the Isser Basa Bechalav and save yourself from bracha vatol. If it's still within...
Once your milk is, your milk is.
No.
Why?
No.
Why not?
There's no such thing as being milchigs. There's an issue to eat milchigs after fleishigs. Right, that doesn't change your status. There's an issue to eat milchigs after fleishigs. You're still after fleishigs.
Cheeseburger also doesn't work. It's spicy.
I mean, if you ate it, then you're
milchigs.
No. You don't become milchigs.
Yeah, so he says that certainly if it's after an hour, and even within the first hour, since we said that whole minhag of waiting an hour, yeah, true, that's a much older minhag, but even that minhag was not me'ikra din, right? The Gemara doesn't say wait an hour. The Gemara it says suda l'suda, and if the Ashkenazim really be'ikra, they follow Tosfos, and suda l'suda just means bench, and so assuming that you already benched from your previous meal, so he says really there's a basis to make it even within an hour. If I'm not mistaken, he's a little bit he says that one much less decisively. I don't know if he says it ends with a tzarachion, but he says it's posher to me that if it's ready after an hour, then you should take a bite of the melech. Within an hour, it's more debatable, but even then, there's also a basis to say that you can make on that.
So if you ate a mashu of the milk, can I have fleishigs now?
Well, you'd have to. Right.
Or you have to wait.
You'd have to do whatever you ordinarily do after milk. We're about to come to that in a moment. What do we ordinarily do after milk? So you'd have to follow whatever the protocol is for that. But let's just wait one second with that. There's an interesting objection to this, like sort of a side point, that to this suggestion that you should take a bite. So we're dining, could we be matter this, Sebastian Bachalov, could we not be matter this, Sebastian Bachalov? There's this sort of from an opposite angle, some people are ma'ira that maybe it wouldn't even help for your bracha vatala, because the halacha is that you don't make a bracha on machalas asuris. So if you're not allowed to eat this, then you don't make a bracha on it. So then it, to eat something that doesn't need a bracha doesn't justify your bracha. There is such a line of thought. I think Lemaisa we're not chashish for that, because I guess it's because it's not mamish machalas asuris, right? It's only asim mishaminhag. It's only us Misha Minhag. It's not Mamash Machalas Asuris. So the Badei Shulchan, he recommends the Maisa taking a bite. And again, but only for Ashkenazim. I don't think he would allow that for a Sephardi. For a Sephardi, this is us. It's just not kosher. You can't, you know, you Bracha Vatala, I'm sorry, but you can't eat something that isn't kosher. But for Ashkenazim, that it's only Misha Minhag, only this, you know, Roy Lahachmir of the Ramah. So there he says that if it's the Shaila Bracha Vatala, you could eat it.
He gives his wife a cotton on his Bracha to eat.
That's a more detailed question. This Shaila, let's picture it in a case where there isn't anyone else around. Now, so this is so we're having this discussion about fleishigs to melechigs, and we said the sheet of Taisvis was that you just have to wait from one meal to the next. Now, Taisus doesn't bring this down, but in some of the other Ashkenazi Paisim, they say that Rabbi Tam was so makel in this that he said that even the waiting from meal to meal is only if you didn't eat anything in between. But if you ate something in between, then you don't even have to wait from meal to meal. It's meal to meal or what we call kinuach v'hadacha. Now, when we go to... Now, let's talk about the reverse, which is what's more negeah to, you know, to the parasha. If you're going from milchiks to fleishiks, with the words of the Gemara, Amar Rav Chisva, achal gvina mutra lechol basar, do we require anything in between? So, according to the Tzvinu Tam that I just mentioned, that the din of kinuach v'hadacha is all that you need when you're going from fleishiks to milchiks, and milchiks to fleishiks is much less chomer than fleishiks to milchiks. So, according to Tzvinu Tam, that means you need zero. You don't need anything going from milchiks to fleishiks. But all the other Rishonim that argue and say that you need more than kinuach v'hadacha, you need certainly those that say that you have to wait 6 hours, and even those that say that the waiting from suda to suda is even if you did kinuach v'hadacha, they learn that from milchiks to fleishiks there's a requirement of kinuach v'hadacha. Kinuach means eating something in between that cleans off your teeth. Hadacha means drinking something in between that also washes, you know, go teeth, get a whole car wash, right? Different stages, that's kinuach v'hadacha. It's interesting, some Rishonim learn that when the Gemara says kinuach v'hadacha, it really means one or the other, but the Shulchan Aruch doesn't pass like that. The Shulchan Aruch says that it means both, kinuach and hadacha. So you have to eat something, drink something, and with that, you can go from your milchiks to your fleishiks. Is there any more requirement than that? So the Ramah says that in the Zohar, it says that you should wait, you should treat milchiks the same way you treat fleishiks. That whatever you do from fleishiks to milchiks, you should also do from milchiks to fleishiks. Mm-hmm. Which, according to, let's say, the standard practice nowadays, that after fleishiks you wait 6 hours. So the Ramah is saying that according to that there's this Zohar, that you should wait 6 hours. And the Ramah says, I'm not saying that you have to do that, but there is such a Zohar. Like he's putting it out there as something that might be a nice thing to do. The priest can bring down that the Maharshal responded to this, or he says to this Zohar, he says, nice thing to do. You're not allowed to do that. That's minus. He says, it's kfira. To say that you're not allowed to eat fleishig because you have some milk, if the Gemara says you are allowed, you can't make up halachas that it doesn't say in the Gemara. You can't say that what the Gemara says is not true. So if the Gemara says that there's a difference, achal basar, asr lechol gvina, achal gvina, mutr lechol basar. So if to come and say that I'm going to be so firm that I'm going to wait after my gvina the same way I wait after my basar, that means I'm arguing with the Talmud Bavli. You're not allowed to argue with the Talmud Bavli. It's a Zayir, okay, but if it's machlekes between the Zayir and the Talmud Bavli, we pass on like the Talmud Bavli. So if the Zayir is just adding something which is, you know, a nice chumrah, but it doesn't go against anything, fine. But to follow a chumrah, not every chumrah is a kosher chumrah. This Marshal says, together with another, you know, he also writes that there is.
If, can we quote you on that?
Yeah, exactly.
Quote the Marshal. Quote the Marshal. That some people feel that if a little bit of Isser falls into their tapshil, so you have a taruvis, even if there's 60 times as much heter, but it's frumer not to eat it. So he says, how could you be frumer than the Torah? If the Torah says there's such a thing as bedel b'roiv, so it's minus, the Marshal calls it, to say, I don't want to rely on that. So he says that over here also. He said that, you know, you brought down a Zayar, but I wouldn't let anyone follow that Zayar. But the Gra says that, no, he thinks that the Rama was right for bringing it down. It's a legitimate position, because even though you're right that you can't go against Talmud Bavli, but remember what it said over here, that in the Talmud Bavli, it didn't really give you rules. It told up as a story, like, and I got to take a statement, and from that we derived what we're supposed to do. But if you remember the whole statement, Marzutra said, my father was much firmer than me. He waited 24 hours. But I don't do that. I only wait, let's say, whatever, that means 6 hours. But, so in that same statement, you see that there's room to be much more machmer. His father's not a kaifer. His father waited 24 hours after fleishigs. So even though you don't have to, but he did it as a firm kite. So if you already see in the Talmud Bavli that there's room to have frumkeit in this area, then you could make up other ones also. If the Zayir says it's nice to wait 6 hours after Melechig, so okay, you don't have to, but if you want to take that on as a frumkeit, that would be like Marzutra's father. So the Gra says that there's room to take on this Chumrah. Okay, does anyone do this? So Lemaisa, the Rama says that in practice, we don't follow this, except if you have gvina kasha, hard cheese. Hard cheese is, what's a hard cheese? So I don't know anything about the production of cheeses, but the basic idea is that when you put milk through some kind of a process and then you allow it to age, then it turns into cheese. Mm-hmm. And the longer it ages, the more of a intense cheese it is. So I think the shach gives a shear of 6 months. That a cheese that's aged for 6 months is considered a hard cheese. I remember many years ago, I was giving a shir Shabbos afternoon, and John Santo was part of the Chabura. So as you know, he's a foodie. And he I think at that time said that he doesn't think that any kosher cheese is, again, maybe this has changed. He doesn't think that any kosher cheese has come anywhere close to that. He said you don't have such gourmet cheeses.
Some of them are marked.
Yeah, I think he was.
Questioning whether it's.
Yeah, but again, maybe things have changed since then. I'm quoting John. That he's a little bit of an expert in the food industry, but Lemaisa, like Izzy said, no, some of them are marked. I think what people usually say nowadays is that Parmesan cheese. I think that's what most of the kosher organizations say. That Parmesan cheese is considered a hard cheese, and you have to wait 6 hours after it.
Where does this originate?
Why does it make a difference?
Why is
he saying the cheese?
It makes it more intense, and it makes it more like butter. Meaning the butter. Okay, so the truth. Okay, it's not. I don't know if it's the digestion per se. The truth is, we didn't. An important part of the thing that we didn't really touch on is what is the reason for the waiting. What?
Does the Marshal agree to that?
I don't think so. No, because I think this is all based on the Zayar, and the Marshal says no. Achal gvina mutar lachal basar. I don't know that he addresses the gvina kasha issue per se, but I think he's very emphatic that there's no such thing as waiting into milchik.
What's the origin of
the Zayar? I think the origin is the Zayar.
The gvina kasha?
No, I don't think so.
Where does gvina kasha come from?
I think the Rama, maybe I could check who the Rama is quoting, but I think it's not one of the early Rishonim, maybe somebody from a little bit before him, or maybe it's on his own, that it's some kind of a pshara of how to be mekayim this Zayar, but without fully following the Zayar. I think that's where it comes from.
But Avram didn't serve that.
What?
Didn't serve gvina kasha.
Now, it says in the pasuk, chema v'chalav. Chema v'chalav is not, right, is not gvina kasha. So, yeah, lemaisa, the kashrus organizations say that you're supposed to be machmer on Parmesan cheese. I don't know anything about the actual, you know, practices in the industry, but I assume that the people that are in charge of that sharing are doing their research, and they say that this fits the description of hard cheese. But where this leaves us is, right, if we come back to our departure point, which was Avraham Avinu Suda, so it would seem that what he did was fine, chema v'chalav, followed by basar, provided that there was something else on the menu. because you do need a kinuach v'adach. I mean, in this teretz of the Chizkuni, that oh, they went from the melachim to the fleishigs, that's fine. According to most Rishonim, you can't go straight from the melachim to the fleishigs. You have to do a kinuach, kinuach or hadacha, or kinuach and hadacha. So there had to be something else on the menu, and provided that there was, then okay, then what he served them was fine. Was there something else on the menu? So here this gets a little bit tricky. If you follow the psukim, it says that when he went into the kitchen to prepare the food, it says first he went ayala el sara vayomer la mari shleish im kemach seiles lushi vasi ugais. So there was going to be cake on the menu, and then it says that la bakarat avram and vayomer la seisay, and then it says that he vayikach and he took the chem of a chalav uben abakar asher asa vayitein lefnehem. What happened to the ugais? So Rashi says that Sarah was, she was a very old woman, but here Hashem was making an ace for her, right? She says, that day she was piercing Nida unexpectedly. It hadn't happened in decades and decades. So she wasn't expecting it. And the dough, because the dough, which was wet, so it was Mokshu L'Kabal Tumah, it became Tamei, and so he didn't serve it. Zakt Chsam Sefer. So there's a Medrash. The Medrash, we talked so far about two answers to the question. How could Avram serve Basar B'Chalav? So we had the Malbim and others that say it wasn't real Basar. And then we had the Chizkuni who says, well, it was the milk first and then the Fleishik, so it's not a problem. There's a third Mahalach to the Kasha, and that is, yeah, it was a problem. It was what they ate was not kosher. And this comes from a Medrash. The Medrash says, this is the Medrash in the Psikta. It's part of a series of very well-known midrashim, because we know from the Gemara in Shabbos, Ches Pei Tes, when the Gemara tells that when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Shemayim, so instead of getting a nice welcome, he had all the malachim ganging up on him, and they said, they objected to Hashem giving the Torah down below, and Moshe Rabbeinu had to answer them something. So in the Talmud Bavli, the way it tells the story was that Moshe Rabbeinu told them all these psukim of the Torah that don't apply to them. You weren't slaves of Mitzrayim. You don't have a father and mother. And a bunch of other such things. In the Psikta, the way the story is told is that the response was, you came down to Avram Avinu's house and you ate Basar B'Chalav and we should give you the Torah? That was the winning argument that caused the Torah to be given to Klal Yisrael instead of being left by the Malachim. But what do you mean they ate Basar B'Chalav? It says Chem of a Chalav and then Ben Abakar. Like the Chizkuni said, there's nothing wrong with that. They didn't do anything wrong. That's why it was Pirsa Sarah Nida. And so the Ugoits became Tamei. So he wasn't able to serve them Ugoits in between, so there was no Kinuach V'Hadacha. And that's what they did wrong. Because if you go from Chem V'Chalav to Ben Abakar, you have to have Kinuach V'Hadacha in between. Avram Avinu was planning that. He said, Lushi Vasi Ugoits. But then the Ugoits became Tamei, so he served it without the Ugoits. That's why they were Nichshol and Basar B'Chalav. And that's why, that's what the Medrash says, that they weren't able to be given the Torah because of that.
Why can't you say?